Another episode of Evolution.org Raw podcast. This is your host, Steve Smeam, with the Mason, and we have a really action-packed episode ahead. We're going to first talk about a little NHL. Now, those of you who don't follow NHL very much, this is still going to be a fun topic because we're going to go over the player poll. So, NHL players were actually polled in this. And they were asked different things. And we're going to see basically the Mason, who is a hockey expert, we're going to kind of see what he thinks versus what the players said. So let's start with the first question that was asked of the players. Who is the league's fastest skater? So who do you think, who would you say is the fastest skater? Maybe the top.
Oh, my God.
The top five, like name a couple guys who you think is in the top five and who do you think?
That's tough. Like it's definitely a young guy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like I'm biased being closest to Toronto for my team. So, I mean, I think Austin Matthews would be up there. Connor McDavid would be up there. Steven Stamkos comes to mind. Mitch Marner.
So I'll give you a hint. 81% of the players picked this guy. It was a huge it was a landslide. The next guy got 3.6%. So who do you think got 81%?
That's a really high number. That actually makes it even worse for me now because now it should be obvious. man. I'll go with Stamkos.
No,
regardless of ankle injury.
No, it's Connor McDavid, 81%.
Should have known.
Yeah. And then number two is Michael Grabner of the Devils. He got 3.6%.
Wow. I can't believe that's such a big number. That's crazy.
He's young and, you know, he's an electrifying player. So how about this one? Which goalie? They asked the skaters in the NHL. Which goalie is the most difficult to score on?
Oh, man. So we're just talking this year, right?
Yeah, they just did the survey.
Okay.
It might be this year, but they just did the survey. They just asked the players who's most difficult to score on. So it could be just like whoever pops in their mind first. It's not just from this year. The question is, which goalie is the most difficult to score on? They didn't say which goalie is the most difficult to score on this month or this year or out of the past 10 years. It was
in
general.
Again, like if you're talking over the last few years – you're definitely going to look at, you know, like Henrik Lundqvist, Carey Price would be like the two, but Price has been so bad. Lundqvist is, you know, not having a great year. He's getting old. I'll say Pekka Rene. Nashville's been awesome this year.
So he's number three. Carey Price got 41%. And then number two is Jonathan Quick at 12%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear Quick would be that high. That's interesting to me.
So how about this one? Who is the most difficult player to play against?
That one, I'm going to go with Sidney Crosby because the way that he plays, he's really tough to play against. He's really big. He's got the reputation for being a bit of a bitch too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you nailed it on that one. He's 30%.
My second guess then would have been PK Subban. And I think of the battles that they've had against each other, and especially last year, because he's tough too, and he can mouth, and he's a really, really strong, really tough player. So I was going to go between those two. So
no, he's not even in the top five. So number two was Connor McDavid, and they had Patrick Kane, number three. So those were... So he's a respected guy. How about this one? This kind of goes with you, with the Subban one. Is who is the toughest player? We have a few of these, so let's kind of move through these quick. Who would you say? This guy got 45%. The next guy got 15%. So he pretty much ran away with it. Who would you say is the toughest player?
Toughest player. That's really tough. Because you know, Subban's up there, but it depends if you're looking at forwards or defensemen. Maybe Brad Marchand from Boston?
No, it's Ryan Reeves of the Golden Knights.
Oh, come on.
Do you agree with that or no?
I guess, but I mean, Marchand's always involved in shit. He's always getting suspended.
Yeah, he's not in the top five for some reason. He wasn't in the top five, so.
This is why it's awesome, because it's pulled by the players, not by the fans. So that's why it's really cool.
Now, this is a tough one. Who is the most underrated player? And the number one guy, this got spread out quite a bit, because the number one guy only is at 9%. So the players kind of have many different opinions on this, but who do you think is the most underrated?
And I feel like every player is going to want to say a player on their team. You know, everybody thinks they play with somebody that's underrated. God, that's so hard. I guess just to throw a name out without thinking too much, I would say Austin Matthews. And the reason I say it, I know he's looked at very well, but I think in the next 2 years, we're going to be questioning, would you trade him for Connor McDavid? I think that'll be a real.
No, he's not in the top five. It's actually Nicholas Backstrom of the Capitals.
Oh, wow, an old guy. Okay.
Yeah. And then Jaden Schwartz is second, and then Nikita Kucherov is third. So those are the
Kucherov,
top three.
Not underrated.
You don't think so? I think just because he's not paid. I think he's not paid. A lot. I think he's only making $5 or $6 million a year, and so I think in that respect, he's kind of underrated. You know.
Yeah, I guess it's tough, you know, when you're playing with good players too and a good team. But yeah, so I guess, yeah, you could see it that way.
Now, here's one interesting. Which player is the best role model? And this guy was way ahead. He got 33%.
Who would you say? Any player models anymore? I'm going to, just because of the recent, do you know when this poll was taken?
Just taken.
I will say Roberto Luongo.
No, it's Sidney Crosby.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, he is. The thing is with Crosby, so he's very to himself. Like, we don't know anything about the guy other than the pictures of him as a kid shooting pucks at his empty dryer. But, I mean, the whole thing with Luongo and the Florida shootings, how he gave that speech on the ice, like, you know, he lives there, he's part of the community. I thought that was awesome. And that's kind of where I was going with that one. That's why I
don't
asked.
Know. And then Jonathan Toews got second at 10%. So it was surprising since that Crosby got 33%. So because everyone says he's a bitch or whatever, but
yeah,
I guess
he's got a bit of that reputation on the ice. But yeah,
it's
he's
not true.
I could see. Okay.
So who would you select to start a franchise? On this one, Connor McDavid got 50%, Sidney Crosby got 24%, and then your guy, Austin Matthews, got third at 6%. So we've already talked about these guys. So let's talk about defensemen. Who is the most difficult defenseman to play against? And this one, the top three guys all got over 20%. So it was pretty much a runaway out of these three guys. So who would you say?
Yeah, it's tricky because a healthy Shea Weber is really good. Duncan Keith would have been, but he's getting old now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's really – I don't know. I don't even want to give an answer, but it's tough.
Yeah, Shea Weber was third. Carlson was first, and Drew Doughty of the Kings was second.
Yeah, Carlson, I guess. He had a really, really off year. But yeah, no, that does make a lot of sense.
And then, again, Crosby and McDavid both got 30% on which forward is the most difficult to play against. So once again, these two are really respected by the players. The best team player, Crosby, 17%, Toews, 11%. Again, we're seeing both these players show up a lot, so they must be really respected. In terms of what quality do you most appreciate in a teammate? Work ethic got first, team player got second, honesty got third, and loyalty got fourth. So that's kind of interesting the way hockey players think. And then if you need to win one game, who's the number one player you would want on your team? Again, Crosby and McDavid are the top two guys in that. So they're pretty much running away with this. So, and here, let's do a couple more, which I found fascinating. When asked which coach would you like most like to play for, this one, you had three guys get over 10%. So it was a little spread out, but still, who would you think would be the coach that players would like to play for?
I think number one would be Mike Babcock.
No, he's not even in the top five. It's the guy from the Blackhawks.
Oh, that's Joel Quenneville?
Yeah.
Yeah, good coach. I mean, he's won championships. You can't argue with championships.
And then John Cooper would be his second.
Wow.
And then Gallant of the Golden Knights is third. So, but all those, the top three, though, they're all doing well this year. So that could be why they want to play for them. You see what I'm saying? So it could be have something to do with that.
Gerard Gallant got fired from his last job because they sucked. So that's completely based on what's happened this year, which exactly. He does deserve credit for. Don't get me wrong. When you have a team that's an expansion team, you know, you don't really have any
plus, stars. I think players want to be in live in Vegas, too. That's like your dream. If you're from Europe, that's like you would love to play in Vegas if you're a young guy.
Oh, I think they love it.
So how about this one? Let's do a couple more fun ones here. Which is your favorite rink to play in?
Oh, it's got to be maybe TD Gardens in Boston, or I would have said the old Joe Louis Arena, even though it's a shithole, and now they're in a new arena. But it's got to be one of the traditional ones, you know, the old Maple Leaf Gardens, something like that. It's got to be one of the originals.
It's Montreal.
Okay, yeah, I guess the atmosphere.
The Bell Center, and then the United Center in Chicago is number two. So those were the top two. The rink with the best ice, these are all northern places. Montreal was first, Edmonton was second, Winnipeg was third, St. Paul, Minnesota was fourth, and Calgary, Alberta was fifth. So I wonder why that is, right? And then, of course, the rink with the worst ice, obviously, are all in the south. It's Sunrise, Florida, BB&T Center, and then Glendale, Arizona got second. So obviously, that has a lot to do with the weather.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So we'll do a couple more real quick. Which team has the best fans? And I'm curious to hear your opinion on this one.
Oh, wow. That is such a tough question. You know, again, my bias, Toronto and Montreal, they both have crazy fans. They travel everywhere. It's kind of like the Yankees, right? Anywhere you go, you find their fans. But also based on the playoffs last year, Nashville, surprisingly, has awesome fans. The atmosphere there was just crazy during the playoffs. So I guess those are my three.
So out of those three that you named, those are in the top four. But the number one at 30% is the one you didn't name, and that is Chicago.
You know what's funny? How many times now has a Chicago player or team or coach or something been named, and I haven't picked it once? So that really shows kind of the bias of, you know, where I live.
Yeah, that's true. So let's do a couple more for fun. Best forward of all time, obviously Wayne Gretzky ran away from it. Mario Lemieux was second, and believe it or not, Sidney Crosby got third. That shows you how much respect he has among the players in NHL. And how about this one? Best defenseman of all time. Who do you think is the best defenseman of all time, according to the players?
So I'll give you two answers. The first answer is my generation, and that's Ray Bourque. I chose his number when I played. I thought he was the best defenseman I'd ever seen. And I guess I'll give you three answers because Brian Leetch was right in that same category. But the one everybody goes to is Bobby Orr. And the reason why it's hard for me to say that, I never saw him play. He's before my time. So I can only go on what, you know, what is said. But Ray Bourque and Brian Leetch were the best defensemen I've ever seen.
So Bobby Orr ran away with it at 61. Second was Nicholas Lidstrom at 29. And then your Ray Bourque got third. So you're good. You're good.
Makes
at this.
Sense.
And then
completely forgot about Lidstrom.
And the last one, let's do who is the best goalie of all time. And this one, you had three players get a lot of percentage. Who do you think?
I know, and I hate this question. Okay, so Patrick Waugh would be number one. Two and three can go back and forth. I will pick number two, Dominic Hasek. The reason I pick him too is because I lived in Buffalo and I grew up there during the Stanley Cup run, and he was amazing, very unconventional, best goalie I've ever seen in person. I never got to see Patrick Waugh in person in an arena. So I will go Waugh, Hasek, and then number three, Martin Brodeur.
Yeah, you nailed the top three, but your order was slightly off. Okay. Brodeur was second, and Hasek was third. So
yeah,
you
exactly.
Definitely,
and
you're good at this for sure. I think you proved to everybody you know your hockey. So that was a good one.
It's fun to do the sports stuff for you guys.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what you think versus what the players voted on. So I was kind of surprised that Crosby is so popular. And even with one player, current or former, you would like to have as a teammate, Wayne Gretzky was number one and Sidney Crosby was number two. So it kind of blows my mind how well respected Crosby is among the players. It just it's amazing to me.
I think a lot of that comes down to when you step back, you can appreciate your rivals and you can appreciate guys that are tough to play against, especially when they have championships. You look at guys that were big time fighters back in the day, and they can be best of friends, you know, after they retire, and they love to talk about it.
Yeah.
So this survey forces them to take a step back off of the ice, where there's more of that respect level for what the other guy does. So I think that's where that
makes sense. And Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years, right?
Yep, they actually have three under Crosby, so they're back to back, and then it would have been a couple of years before that.
So that's probably why he's so well respected, because when they were watching it last year, or the last couple of years, that's the guy who's been on the winning team. So that was a good one. So that was a fun one. We're going to talk NFL next week, because we have the free agency coming up. So we're going to talk about that. So relationship question, let's get right to that. This one came in. Dear Steve Matt, my friend's birthday is coming up, and he told me today that he's freaking out because he's going to be 38. He was previously married for 10 years and got divorced, where both parties cheated on each other. And since then, he has been fucking 20-year-old chicks he meets online and says guys are supposed to fuck around and shouldn't get serious. He also said as men, we are past our prime, because he says football players who are his age are retired. Do you agree with this or not? So I already saw this question. This is the first time Matt's hearing it. So let me chime in first, give Matt a chance to kind of think about this. First off, are we past our prime? Matt and I are also in our late 30s. If we're talking about professional sports, that is true. You're past your prime. But that is only because in professional sports, they replace the older guys with younger guys. Every year, they draft new players. They want to get younger. They want to get faster. So when you're younger, your maximum heart rate is lower. Every year you age, it drops by one. So in that respect, yes, it's true. In real life, though, that is absolutely not true. Like, the prime of your life as a man in a modern first world society is actually around our age, late 30s, 40s. That's when you're peaking. You should be like getting your career should be really buzzing along. That's when you really understand women. That's when you have, you know, the pick of the litter. You can date women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even 50s. You know, when you're young, when you're 20 years old, you can't date older women. They're not going to take you seriously. So I disagree with that. Second off, based on this guy's history, I would say he's been totally mind fucked, because it sounds like he got married in his 20s, obviously. And he got divorced, and now he's just, like, you know, fucking around these younger girls. So he did kind of the opposite of what I think guys should be doing who think like this. You should do that fucking around in your 20s, and then once you get in your 30s, then you can settle down and get serious and get married. He did the opposite. He got married first, realized that it wasn't for him, both of them cheated, and then he got divorced, and now it sounds like he's just trying to, like, catch up for lost time and just fucking around. So it sounds like, you know, the way he's thinking is he probably grew up in a very dysfunctional, you know, situation. Probably his parents cheated on each other. Maybe there was abuse going on. Maybe there was, you know, the parents didn't get along. They probably got divorced too. So that's kind of, he's taking that dysfunction into his real life. So I would say, listen, don't worry about what your friend does. Don't worry about what he says. And just do your thing, you know, and don't believe what he's saying. That it's just not true that, you know, that you're supposed to just go around and fuck random women for the rest of your life. I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. That's you. But listen, around the holidays, when you have no family and you're going to be like, shit, I'm lonely, you know, and you're going to be wishing that you didn't have that. And those girls that you're fucking around with, they're not going to be on your side when you're sick. They're not going to be on your side if you're in the hospital. They're not going to give a shit about you. So to have that one person, special person in your life, that's something that, you know, you can appreciate. So I said a mouthful on this one. Matt, you want to help this guy out?
Yeah, I think number one, just like fitness, our goals change. That's one thing to keep in mind. And number two, and this goes with anything in life, you always want what you don't have. Okay, so remember that. The grass is not always greener, but you always want what you don't have. Guys that are single and been fucking around for a while, they want to settle down at some point. They want that stability. They want the girl that's going to, you know, you're going to come home and she's comfortable wearing sweatpants and she's going to make you something to eat and you can hang out and watch a movie, okay? But guys that are in a long-term relationship, once in a while, they don't want the nagging. They're tired of the boring shit. They want to fuck around. It happens, right? We always want what we don't have. So you have to figure out what you actually want. You know, don't listen. Like Steve said, don't listen to your buddies. Everybody has their own life. You know, some people, marriage is a bad idea. I work with a guy like that. We actually just had a conversation yesterday about it. And he is not the right person to be married. For me, I am. I'm so glad that I'm, you know, in the life that I'm in where it's calmed down and I have stability. I'm happy with that, you know? So I think you have to, you know what? If you need to fuck around to get it out of your system because the relationship was so bad, that's fine. Like, do it, get it out of your system. But then reevaluate your goals. See where you're at in your life. You're definitely not past your prime. By no means. I'm 35. I'm not even at my prime yet. I'll tell you that. I'm still learning, still growing every day. And I feel better every day. And I feel like I'm still working towards going up that hill to understanding everything. So by no means think you're past your prime. You know, look at the positives and just think about what you want to do and where you're at. You know, financially, things should still be getting better for you. At this point, you're probably set in your career and you're just, you know, chugging away. So just keep going and keep us updated and we'll help you out as much as we can.
So our next topic is fix my cycle, bruh. And Matt, this time you had one come in.
Yeah, funny. I got one on EQ. This is really interesting. So his title of his question was drop the EQ. And it says, I'm in week 9 of a test EQ cycle, 500 milligrams of each. I don't see any benefits from the EQ. Didn't get an increase in strength or endurance, no vascularity or hunger. Is it even worth continuing injecting the additional hormones? I was thinking about dropping it and just finishing the last few weeks with test and T-ball. So I like this question. I'll go through some of it. I'll leave some for Steve. Steve's kind of the steroid expert here, so I'll give my, you know, initial thoughts on it. So he's in week 9. So first thing I would mention is EQ. It's just peaking at around week 8. So you're just getting into that sweet spot. The second thing is, how do you know you're not getting anything from the EQ? How do you know that you're not getting anything from the test? You know, it's really hard when you're running multiple compounds to just call it out like that. 500 of each, not the best dosing ratio, in my opinion, for me. I would kind of pick one. Pick what your goals are. I usually like to run test lower, personally. I think EQ is amazing. If you really want the benefits of the EQ, I'd be at, you know, the 600 mark for sure to really get the most out of it. But there's a lot more to it. I'll let Steve get into as far as, you know, endurance and vascularity, like body fat. There's way more to EQ. You know, you don't just run it and turn into, you don't just look like the Hulk by running EQ. That's not how it works. So, you know, from my end, I'd give it more time. Hopefully he's running proper supports and everything else, but I'll let Steve get into a little more about EQ and what you should expect from it and how it works and kind of tell this guy where he should be going.
Well, first of all, that is a good point that he's only at week 9, but you know, it's one of these perfect examples of people who expect too much out of steroids. So vascularity, it's going to be hard for you to get vascularity if you have too much body fat. And this guy didn't say how much body fat he has. He's also running 500 milligrams of testosterone with it. And testosterone will cause water retention. Even if you run an AI with it, it's going to cause some bloat, even if you run an AI with it. With most people. Some people can rip up on testosterone with little to no AI. Those are just freaks. But most of you, that's what's going to happen. So you're just not going to get the vascularity that you want. He's complaining that he has no hunger. Again, EQ, I don't get any hunger on EQ. It's a very mild compound. You're not going to have explosive results. It's not like Tren. When you run on Tren after 2 or 3 weeks, your lifts are up. You can feel it. You're getting these crazy side effects. There's a lot of shit happening. It's so fucking androgenic. EQ isn't androgenic. EQ is very mild. So you're not going to have, it's not something that you can run and get these crazy results from. So you're expecting too much from it and you're not letting it, you know, you're not tapping into what it's capable of doing. So if you're going to run EQ, run it the right way. Run a TRT dose of testosterone only. This way you can actually get those endurance benefits, because you're not going to get endurance benefits when you're strapping 5 or 10 pounds of water on your back, because that's what you're doing when you run 500 milligrams a week of testosterone with it. You're not going to necessarily get an increase in hunger on any steroid. Now, D-Bol and DECA, those are great for hunger. Testosterone is usually great for hunger. But again, not everybody has that result. So if you wanted hunger, I would have told you run DECA. Run DECA instead. So again, you know, you're expecting a little too much out of steroids. That's my opinion. Anything else to add, Matt?
Yeah, just the last thing. On top of the endurance, he also mentioned he didn't get an increase in strength. If you're 9 weeks into a cycle, and forget the EQ altogether, okay? If he's 9 weeks into a test cycle with 500 milligrams per week, and he doesn't see any increase in strength, there's a problem. There's absolutely a problem. He's either, his diet and training are terrible, or his gear is fake. Because even on 300 milligrams a week of test, you're going to get stronger. You can't deny that. It's going to happen. So That's the only other thing I wanted to point out with the cycle. There's something else going on there I definitely look at.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. Like, I really think no vascularity. Again, if your diet was on point and you're in a caloric deficit, you should have an increase in vascularity. So obviously you're not, your body fat's too high, you know, because I'm a vascular guy myself. My body fat's like at 8% right now. When I work out, my veins are popping out. So, you know, so you got to get that body fat down. So it's hard to really give you advice without knowing your stats. But that's a perfect example of why, you know, you say you have no vascularity, you should already have vascularity going into your steroid cycle to begin with. If you don't expect the steroids to give you vascularity. If you're not understanding how your body reacts to hunger, you shouldn't be running steroids either. Either you eat too much or you don't eat enough. You have hunger issues or you don't have hunger issues. Using steroids is not going to cure that. So you need to fix the problems beforehand. And then use the steroids for icing on the cake. You'll get far better results. I mean, we see this shit all the time. Most guys run steroids and look like shit. We see it all the time in our gym. Go to any franchise gym. Most of the guys have either run steroids or are running steroids. Even if they look like shit, they have. Because steroids are so easy to get. It's as easy to buy steroids online as it is to go on Amazon and buy a fucking electronic. So that's how it is. So what do you got? What else you got for us, Matt, on the diet?
Okay, so this isn't really a question sent in. This is more of a rant on my end. So I hope you guys bear with me here. I was just away for about 2.5 days for work, for meetings, and I could not believe the amount of consumption of food, of everything that people do. I've worked for this company for 7 years, and I haven't paid close attention to it until this year. And I'm going to go through one day and kind of tell you guys how the day works. And I promise you 100% on my life, I'm not bullshitting at all. This is reality. This is what I saw. Okay. So our meeting started at 9:00. At the hotel we were at, breakfast ran from 7:00 to 8:00. So I'd get down there for breakfast at 7:00. As you guys know, a lot of you that follow me, I do intermittent fasting. I don't eat breakfast. I don't eat till after 1:30 every day. I decided for this week I would change my window to be 12 to 8 because I knew what time lunch would be served. So I kind of had to tweak it a bit. So 12 to 8 would be my feeding window for this trip. Okay, so I go down for breakfast and I sit down there and I have a cup of coffee to be social and hang out with everybody. What do you think the hotel breakfast is? It's eggs that are frozen and full of preservatives, sausage, bacon, bowls of frosted flakes and Fruit Loops and shit like that. Maybe a couple pieces of fruit there for the odd person that's going to eat it. And that's it. Right? So you can imagine what people are stuffing in their guts. This is first thing in the morning. Then we travel and, you know, we're about 10 minutes away to where our meeting site is. So we get there and before the meeting starts, everybody's kind of, you know, getting ready to sit down and there's tons of food spread out for everybody that lives close enough. They didn't stay overnight. So even the people that ate breakfast, they're now getting plates full of pastries and more cups of coffee and they're getting granola bars and shit and they're sitting down to munch on that. This is at 9:00 in the morning. We'd have our first break at about 10:30. What do you think people do? They grab more pastries and more granola bars and they sit down and they drink more coffee. Then we get lunch at 12:30. So this is when I actually get to have my first meal. The trick that I tell most people to do when you're in this situation is there's always salad and nobody eats it. Fill up half of your plate, 3/4 of your plate with lettuce and you're good. Okay. You can control your dressing and everything. So that's what I did. I ate basically half a plate of lettuce and we had chicken skewers, which is actually pretty safe, but there was kind of like a sweet and sour sauce on them. So I was careful. I only took two, which was roughly, I'm going to say about 3 ounces of chicken, because I knew the sugar that would be in the sauce and, you know, try to play it safe. But, you know, people are not doing that. They're not eating any vegetables at all, right? So it's chicken, it's sausage rolls, it's pasta, it's shit like that, right? People are just going nuts. They stuff themselves because it's a free meal, right? And people are gluttonous. That's what we do. So that's at about 12:30. Fast forward to our next break, which would be, say, around 3:30. What do you think people are doing? They're back up to the tables, filling up on the next round of snacks, which is bags of chips, more granola bars, pop. You know, there's Coke, there's Sprite, all that shit there. So they're just piling those in. They're getting cookies, everything else. Then we're on to dinner. So the meetings end, say, 5:30. Dinner's at 6 or 7, depending on the day for us. So we go to dinner. Dinner happened to be sushi, which can be good or bad. So for this situation, it's terrible. Basically, we're at a really big table, and there's an iPad that gets passed around. And you just order whatever you want. It's basically one fee per person. So the company picks up the tab, whatever. It doesn't matter. Eat whatever you want. So people are drinking crazy amounts of alcohol. They're not paying attention to the amount they eat at all, because a plate would come out with certain sushi rolls. So they're eating a couple of those. Then the tempura comes out. They're eating a couple of those. Then the dumplings come out. They're eating a couple of those. So for about 2 hours, they're just munching nonstop, drinking beer nonstop, right? That ends, say, around 9 o'clock, go back to the hotel. What do you think happens at the hotel? Now you have the hospitality suite, which is a bar and a bunch of like chips and snacks. And people are just going nuts. So to make a long story short, or make a long story long, that's one day. And that's how much food people are eating. I have no doubt in my mind that there are lots of people there that were getting 10,000 calories plus per day. And maybe I'm being generous by that. So if you guys go away for work, you have to be so careful. You really have to be mindful, because it gets out of hand. And I know Steve would like absolutely lose his mind on people like this for eating that much food. But this just shows like the amount of consuming we do. And you wonder why everybody's obese. And that's why. I mean, I guess, like, what's your thoughts on that, Steve? Like, where do you even go?
What do these people look like? Are they all fat?
Yes, they all look terrible.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, it's one of those things where, you know, those types of jobs where you're traveling and you're going to conventions, you're going to banquets, you're staying at hotels and stuff, you're always on the road. You never eat, like, you never prepare your own food, so you're forced to eat food, you know, somewhere. So in that situation, you have to be really, really disciplined, and you have to, like, know your limits as in terms of what you're eating. So it's one of those situations where these people, the food is free, right? You said it was free?
Yep. Yeah, it's all covered. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's covered, and they figure, you know, hey, it's free. I might as well just eat my brains out. And like you said, the issue is they're eating. The thing is with intermittent fasting, and a lot of people bash intermittent fasting, but here's why intermittent fasting works so well when it comes to losing weight, is because let's say first thing you get up, you know, you do your thing, then you go to this location, what Matt was describing, and you eat a breakfast, and you eat all that crap that Matt was mentioning. Well, right off the bat, it's a roller coaster, because you're going to get hungry again in 2 hours. Your blood sugar and your brain is going to want more food. So then you go back again, and you're going to eat more snacks. Then 2 hours later, you're going to go back again and eat more snacks. And every day, and every 2 hours for the whole day, you're going to want to eat. You're going to want to eat. You do some work, do a meeting, whatever. Then the next thing is, oh, let's go grab a bite to eat. You know, that's what everyone does. So the way intermittent.
But God,
huh?
It's so easy, yep, to not fall into that trap. Like, for me, you know what I did? I didn't eat breakfast, like I said. I got to the meeting site. When it was snack time, I didn't have anything because it wasn't my 12 o'clock yet. I had my lunch, which was half salad and two pieces of chicken. Then at our snack, I grabbed an apple because there's always a little bit of fruit, but nobody fucking eats it, right? Because everyone's stuffing their gut. And then when I go, I don't eat any more snacks. I don't need snacks. I just ate. I'm fine. Then when I go to dinner, guess what? I drove to dinner. So I'm drinking water. I'm not going to drive with fucking alcohol in my system. So no, I'm not going to do that. I'm drinking water and I'm being cognizant of what I'm eating. So I make sure it's reasonable. And then I go home and I go to bed. Like, I don't go out to the after party. I go to my hotel and I'm in bed at 10 o'clock and I get up the next day for the meeting. So it's so easy to control this shit if you just do it, right? You don't have to fall into the trap. It's not hard, guys.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, the intermittent fasting, if you don't eat right off the bat when you wake up, you won't get hungry. You see what I'm saying? So you can just – the time is your enemy when it comes to food if you're trying to lose weight. Because if you start eating right off the bat in the morning at 7 or 7:30 in the morning or 8 o'clock, you're going to want to eat again at 10 o'clock. And you're going to eat again at 12 o'clock and at 2 o'clock and at 4 o'clock and at 6, you know, every 2 hours. And you see fat people all the fucking time. They'll fucking eat pizza and they'll eat a burger and they'll eat this, they'll eat that. Every fucking 2 hours they got to eat. You're fat. You don't need to fucking eat every 2 hours. But in this situation, the food is free. And because it's in front of them, they feel the need to just stuff themselves constantly. So what Matt's doing is what you need to do. If you're in a situation and you're traveling for your job or you're going to conventions or you're on vacation or whatever, don't eat for half the day. The first half of the day, do not eat. That's why intermittent fasting works so well when it comes to losing weight, because you won't get hungry until you actually start eating. And then once you start eating, then that roller coaster starts. That avalanche starts once you start eating. So you might as well just not eat, like what Matt was saying, until 12, 1, 2 o'clock and just eat in your window. This way you won't overeat and you won't stuff yourself too much. So,
I shit you not. People are like trying not to fart at these meetings because of the amount of grease and shit they're eating. I can see them literally trying not to fart because they don't want to smell. It's embarrassing, right? But it's not hard to see. And the other thing is, these hotels all have gyms. You can go. You know, it's not going to be a great gym. But you know what? Even if you just want to get some cardio in, go outside and run. You know, just do something. It's really not hard. And that's why this was such an eye-opener for me, because I don't try hard. It's easy. And like, I'm not 8% body fat like Steve. I'm probably 11, maybe 12, but I'm fairly lean and I don't even have to try at things like this. You don't have to like, oh my God, like this is ridiculous. I can't believe I'm not eating. No, you just do a normal day. It's really not a big deal. Just plan your shit out before you go. And just live a normal day. You can really do it if you try. You know, even any, you know, catered meal, they're always going to have some types of salads. And you know what? The best thing is nobody else eats them. That's why it's great. The key is fill up your plate with that shit first. And then whatever else you see that you want to try, just take a tiny little bit and you're good. I promise you, you'll be fine. But man, I'm telling you, I the way people eat, it's no wonder everybody's fat. Like, just a quick little 10-second story. Part of my job is I go into different grocery stores and I talk to people. A guy I work with thought it was funny because he's got a huge gut. He walked into a store around Thanksgiving time and his contact made a joke and said, "Hey, I need to call security because you're hiding a whole turkey under your jacket because of his beer gut." Like, this stuff's not funny. It's funny to joke about it, you know, from my point of view, but for him, that's not funny. To me, that means he's going to die at a young age. You know, like, it's no wonder why we have these huge guts out there, guys. When you see people, you just look at what they're doing. It's absolutely insane. It blows my mind.
Well, more importantly than dying at a young age is you're going to live a shitty life. You're just going to feel tired all the time. You're not going to be able to get it up, you know, and all this stuff, it's a domino effect. And I bet you most of these guys cannot get it up to save their life. And they probably have a zero sex life, you know. They probably haven't banged their wife, like, in months. So, and that's why. It's because you feed your body shit, your body will react shitty. And that's just how it is. That's human nature. So our final topic kind of ties into this. And I saw something absurd yesterday at my gym. My gym's really started pushing their smoothie bar. Okay? And I saw this, whatever it's called, you know, where they put on with a magic marker, they write stuff down. It's like a little plaque board or whatever in front of where the smoothie bar is. And they had, it said benefits of whey protein. And then it had this list that I read and I was just blown away. And the first thing it said was helps you burn fat. And I was like, I'm like, really? Whey protein helps you burn fat? Like, and then so I started, I had all these ridiculous things on there. It said helps fight cancer, helps fight diabetes, helps you recover from your workout, helps you build more muscle. I mean, all these absurd things on this list. And I was just like, wow. So I went online and I started Googling this, and lo and behold, I saw studies that supported each of these things. I even saw studies that showed that whey protein prevented inflammation. And it just goes to show you that the supplement companies have done a fantastic job. Just like what Matt was talking about with the food industry, the way the food industry has succeeded. If they get all these guys eating 10,000 calories a day and getting people to think that you're supposed to have a huge breakfast, because that's what everyone says, and that you're supposed to eat every 2 hours, because that's what everyone says, they're winning. And they have won, for sure. So, you know, in all these studies that come out showing this, it's all these stupid, like, they'll do a study like on 11 people, or they'll do a study on old people where they gave them protein powder. These are people who have like muscle wasting diseases who take protein powder and it helps them prevent muscle loss. So it's not translated to the real world. Let's be honest here. Inflammation. How can consuming dairy, which is inflammatory, reduce inflammation? It doesn't. How can whey protein help you recover from a workout? How? It doesn't. What helps you recover from a workout is getting sleep, is rest, is recovery. That's when your body starts healing itself. Just in consuming whey protein is not going to do it for you. Fighting cancer. How does dairy help you fight cancer? It doesn't. So when we see this type of thing pushed and it boggles the mind at all the misinformation out there. This is why I feel sorry for people. I really do. This is why I'm on the forums helping people, because I want to kind of you know, I want to teach people the right way. And there's so much misinformation out there and so much bad information. If you went on YouTube and you put in benefits of whey protein, you'd get hundreds of videos talking about the benefits of protein. If you put in, should you eat every 2 hours to boost metabolism, you put that in, you get tons of videos saying, yeah, you have to eat every 2 hours. You have to eat a big breakfast. You have to do this. You have to do that. There's so much misinformation out there. And the food companies, one, the restaurant industry, the food companies, they want you eating a big breakfast. They want you going to IHOP and Denny's and Waffle House and eating a 3,000-calorie, 2,000-calorie breakfast. That's what they want. That's how they're going to make money. If no one ate breakfast, then these companies would go bankrupt overnight. So, I mean, it's just so scary, the type of misinformation put out there. And 90% of people believe it. What do you think, Matt?
I think you're right, Steve. It's all bullshit. I think this is what we should do. Steve and I are going to create a study, okay? And it's going to be all about weight loss, and we're going to give you a secret. We're going to study it over the course of a year. Every month, we're going to get a haircut. And I bet you, if you weigh me before and after my haircut, I bet you I weigh less. So if I could put a big study out there saying, proving that haircuts promote weight loss, you can't argue with me because it's true. I've proven it. And I could prove it over and over and over again every month for a whole year. This is how these studies work, guys. Okay? 99% of them are a joke. You have to understand what kind of study you're looking at and what you're talking about. Whey protein, does it promote fat loss? Okay, this is how they can say that. They can say that whey protein can promote muscle gain, which in itself, it doesn't. You have to do a lot of other things first and get enough protein. And then, sure, you can gain muscle, but they're going by muscle. Having more muscle equates to a higher metabolism. A higher metabolism means you burn more fat. So what they're saying is whey protein causes you to lose fat. That's very indirect. Same way with steroids. Steroids don't burn fat. But you know what? If you use them and you gain muscle, in theory, your metabolism's higher than it was before if you didn't gain fat. So maybe you could lose more fat. It's very indirect. You have to understand what you're talking about. So absolutely do your research. Don't fall into these traps. What works? Eating less food. If that's what you're trying to do, if you're trying to lose fat, eat less food. That'll work. Don't eat more whey protein.
All right, guys. Listen, we appreciate you listening to the show, guys. We're not bashing all supplements at all. There's some really good supplements out there. Most supplements, though, are bullshit. N2BM actually sells supplements, and Matt and I were actually talking about this before the show. And we use their products because they actually do something. They actually work. They actually contain ingredients that work in synergy to help you work. And they have actually a good quality protein powder, because 99% of protein powders out there are shit. Just look at the ingredients. But N2BM actually has a whey protein isolate that has 6 ingredients, and it's sweetened by stevia, not by sucralose, not by high fructose corn syrup, not by soybean oil, all this crap. It's really good quality. So we're not saying all supplements are shit, but we're saying yes, most of these supplements are shit. Most of the shit that you hear from supplement companies is shit. So you gotta know what you're putting in your body. And I guarantee you at my gym, if you went there and you ordered a protein shake, they would give you the shittiest quality protein shake. It would be horrible, and it would make you feel like shit, and it would cause all kinds of things like stomach upset, inflammation, and all that crap. So make sure you get a good quality whey isolate if you do get whey protein, and N2BM sells a really good one. So we appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back next week and talk a little football. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Take care.